806, time to go solar with Sierra Pacific. Call now for $500 off, 800-551-3040. Thanks to Chris Landry in the last segment. About 5 minutes from now, we're going to check in with Dave Scretta, a Chiefs writer for the Associated Press. He really covers all things Kansas City. But, you know, Royals aren't doing much right now, so I think we'll probably go ahead and stick with the Chiefs on that one. Also got Wheel of Kings coming up. Don't want to miss that. That's
the final.
The final
name.
One. And we're going to have
final
some,
name.
We're going to have some details for you about how you go and get the winner, too, coming up next week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. There's been a little bit of a shift in the protocol here that we're going to tell you about in about a half an hour. So Dave Scretta talking Raiders Chiefs coming up in just a couple of minutes. If you missed the first 2 hours of the show, well, here's what it was. All that madness and more you can find on the podcast at khdk.com. It'll be posted immediately after the show if you want a little bit more of that. Again, Dave Scretta, the AP, joining us to talk Raiders and Chiefs coming up here momentarily. Interesting game on tap for this weekend. You mentioned the weather, Katie. And Chris had some things to say about the Raiders. He's not totally convinced that they're for real. And that's not to say that they're a bad team, but, you know, 4-1 is a lot different than sustaining it throughout the course of the season. And when you struggle as badly as the Raiders tend to defensively, it'll come back to bite you.
It's crazy because we all know it all comes down to who can get it done when the game is on the line. And that is one thing the Raiders have been able to do, is to take care of business in the fourth quarter, especially down the stretch. So, I mean, there is a little bit of luck involved, but you can't completely say that's all it is.
Here to provide some insight on the Chiefs this weekend, he covers them for the Associated Press. Dave Scretta joins us on KHTK. Dave, it's Nate and Katie. Thanks for making the time today.
No problem, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great. I mean, you got a Chiefs team coming in. We just had a guy on, Chris Landry, that said, and I don't disagree with this, Dave, that division is wide open now, especially with the Broncos and their struggles. The Chiefs could very well be the team to beat come the end of the season. But they've got a test coming up this weekend. What do they have in store for the Raiders?
Well, it's like you said, it's a big game for them. You know, going into that Denver game last night, if Denver wins and if Oakland wins, and all of a sudden the Chiefs are looking at a huge hole in the AFC West, even though, like you said, they're probably one of the favorites in the division. So you couple Denver playing poorly last night, and if the Chiefs can go on the road and get a win against Oakland, all of a sudden they're tied with the leaders in the loss column. So I think the Chiefs understand how important this is. Andy Reid, of course, says every game's important, blah, blah, blah. But even he, I think, is willing to acknowledge this one probably is a little more important than usual.
You know, I'm curious, when you look at this Raiders team from the beginning of the season, obviously they're a team that has much improved over the last couple years especially. But there's still this thing where everyone, when you talk about the AFC West, you talk about the Chiefs and the Broncos because they've had success over a course of time. Compared to where people thought the Raiders would be at the beginning of the season to now, what are your thoughts on just what they've been able to do, especially on the road?
I mean, I think it's really impressive, you know, and I was on board early in the season as saying if Kansas City was going to have any real rival to win the division, it's probably going to be Oakland instead of Denver. You know, I think the offense that you guys have out there is so dynamic. You've got a franchise quarterback, which the Chiefs I'm sure are a little bit envious of. And I think a defense that's probably underperformed, and if they start playing up to their potential, then there's a good chance Oakland's going to be really good. And talking to guys in the locker room, I don't think the Chiefs are under any preconceptions that this is going to be an easy game for them. They know how talented Oakland is, and you know it's not the same Raiders team we've seen the last 4, 5, 6, 15, 20 years.
Dave Scretta, the AP, joining us on KHDK, covers the Chiefs for the Associated Press. You talked about a franchise quarterback for the Chiefs, and I don't know if there's a question to follow this, Dave, but this is a stat that I saw that blew my mind. The Chiefs have not won a game with a quarterback they drafted in 29 years. Is that unbelievable?
It is, and I think part of it is the fact they just haven't tried. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't spent a lot of draft picks, high draft picks on quarterbacks, and it's something that's certainly the gall of Chiefs fans here. You know, the fact that they picked Dee Ford instead of Derek Carr, I think is really going to get their goat this weekend. I mean, they're gonna see a guy who's maybe one of the best young quarterbacks in the league right now, and then look over on their sideline at a pass rusher who can barely get on the field. So that's certainly a black eye for general manager John Dorsey here in Kansas City.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, you've got this guy in Alex Smith who really is pretty solid. But, you know, do Chiefs fans have this feeling when you've got Andy Reid and Alex Smith, who are both successful, Andy Reid probably more so, but they have a reputation as being limited. So is there always kind of a cautious apprehension when the Chiefs have regular season success?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's this feeling here that that the floor of this team is pretty high, right? That that when they play poorly, they're still going to be okay. But I think there's also a feeling here that their ceiling is very low. That, you know, when they play their best, they're going to be what they were last year. They might win a playoff game, but when they go on the road and play a premier team like New England, they're going to lose. And that's sort of the MO of Alex, especially. You know, at least Andy Reid has been to a Super Bowl. One thing people quickly forget about Alex Smith too is he's not a young guy anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 31, he's going to be 32, and you know, he's getting to that age where a quarterback, especially a guy who is mobile and needs to be able to escape the pocket and move around, is getting kind of limited. So the Chiefs need to start looking at kind of a long-term solution after Alex Smith, and right now they really don't have one. They signed Nick Foles, and that's a pretty good backup. But you know, they're going to be in the market for quarterbacks going forward, and that's why I say that I think they're a little jealous of Oakland sort of having their future figured out.
Dave Skreta covers the Chiefs for the Associated Press. Dave, one of the most glaring deficiencies for the Raiders early in the season has been their defense, and particularly for me, their secondary with Amerson, Smith, and even, you know, Smith, who you're familiar with, but even Reggie Nelson has struggled recently. That has to be something that the Chiefs are really focusing on and targeting in this game.
Well, you would think so. I think it looks like Sean Smith has played a little bit better the last couple of weeks, but you're right. That's certainly the big weakness. The problem for the Chiefs is trying to exploit it, and their wide receivers haven't been particularly good outside of Jeremy Maclin. And I kind of group Travis Kelce into that mix too, because he's sort of a wide receiver in a tight end's body. But when the Chiefs have to air it out, it's usually not a good thing. It usually means they're way behind early, like they were in Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago. So especially now getting Jamaal Charles back closer to 100%, I would expect them to try to run the ball, to be perfectly honest, and hopefully that opens up the pass game for them a little bit more.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Jamaal Charles, too. I mean, you said he's getting closer to 100%. What's his practice routine been like? And I guess how big of a load do you expect him to carry on Sunday?
I think it's going to be considerable, to be honest. There's a big change this week. He's a full participant, but beyond being a full participant in practice, he's a full participant with the first team offense. Up until the bye week here that we just had, he'd sort of been splitting time with the first team and the scout team, and that's changed. He's now fully with the first team offense. So I think he views himself as being fully back. Andy Reid has been probably overly cautious with him. But I think, like Jamaal said, it's time to take the training wheels off and see what he can do.
One of the great things about the Raiders this year has been the fact that their offensive line has done a tremendous job of allowing Derek Carr to really work and get things done. How do the Chiefs figure out a game plan to put a little bit more pressure on Derek Carr this week?
Well, if they're going to get any pressure on him at all, it's going to have to come from the defensive tackles. It's going to have to come from right up the middle because, like I said, Dee Ford has been a complete disappointment as a first-round draft pick. Tom Bailey is aging before our eyes. He's not the player that he was even 3 years ago. And obviously, without Justin Houston, there's been very, very little pass rush. They plucked Ceil Moore, who you guys are very familiar with, off waivers from Indianapolis. They're kind of hopeful that he can factor into the mix, even though he's only been practicing for about a week. But pass rush is still the huge black mark on this defense right now. They have 5 sacks through 4 games, and that's not going to get it done in this league.
And that's scary against a quarterback who really thrives under pressure when you blitz against him. The Chiefs are in a tough spot. Dave Skreta is covering them for the Associated Press and was kind enough to make some time for us. Dave, we really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, guys.
All right. Take care. Dave Skreta, again, Associated Press on the Chiefs beat for us. And, you know, I'm going to go back to that stat. 29 years since the Chiefs won a game, not a playoff game, okay, a single game with a quarterback that they drafted, okay?
That laugh is evil.
In 29 years, they've drafted 11 quarterbacks. Only two of them ever got a start in the league, and those two have 11 starts total in 29 years. Brody Croyle got 10 of them. They lost all 10, right? Exactly. Brody Croyle.
Huh?
Right. Who is that guy? He started 10 of them, lost all of them, averaged 128 yards a game through the air, and the Chiefs, in those 10 points, averaged 12 and a half points a game.
It's pretty sad.
That's brutal.
It's sad.
And when you look back through the list of guys like 49ers castoffs, whether it's Steve Bono or Elvis Gerbach or now Alex Smith or, you know, any number of other guys, the Damon Hewards of the world that they've had out there, it's remarkable that they've had any success at all.
You know, it's something about the Raiders that has gotten me thinking, because obviously they've been winning games and they're in sole possession of you know, first place in the division. But the crazy thing to me is we talk a lot about how they've done it. We've talked about their defense being kind of a problem for them. However, their offense has figured out ways to score, and they're a fantastic offense. So I'm wondering, you know, if the – I don't know. It's like when you look at the Raiders down the stretch and what they're able to do, maybe their offense is even better than we give them credit for, which we give them a lot of credit for it, because they figure out ways to win despite their defense really not being helpful. So I don't know. It's like a weird kind of thing with me right there between their offense and their defense. If their defense was just a tad bit better, would their offense even get more credit than they already do?
Oh, I think so. When you got the ball a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest testament to the growth of Derek Carr is just answer this question. I mean, two-minute drill, do you trust him to get points?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, I think you could say the same for, you know, Philip Rivers is on that list. You know, guys, it doesn't necessarily translate to wins is my point.
Right.
But the elite quarterbacks, if you've got a two-minute drill, you're scared if you're a defense. And Derek Carr is definitely one of those guys right now.
Because they haven't been winning games by huge differentials. You know, and we said it earlier with Chris Landry. It's like, oh, maybe they've gotten a little bit lucky. I don't know how much luck you can say it is to go in and win on the road, which they've been able to do very well.
Even if it is lucky, right? The luck ends as soon as the clock expires, right? I mean, that's the way I see it. They're 4-1 now, right? That's the part that matters. They could have gotten lucky in all four of those wins, but the point is, They did. And, I mean, that could keep happening for the rest of the year for
all
we know.
Well, I also think part of it saying
can't bake on it, can't bank against it.
Yeah, but I think part of saying that there's some luck involved, too, is because Jack Del Rio is doing some things that are a little bit unconventional. Like some of his play calls in the sense of when he decides to go for it.
Which drives me crazy. That should be the norm.
It does drive a lot of people crazy for the opposite reason. Like, what are you doing? Why would you do that now? But he doesn't hesitate to roll the dice, so people think it's luck, or is it just good play calling?
It's good play calling because, like, there's overwhelming statistical evidence that he's usually doing the right thing.
Right.
I mean, more often than not, especially if you're inside the opponent's five on offense, that field position is more important than 3 points.
Right.
He recognizes that, and the numbers back that up. And the same goes for going for two, especially late in that New Orleans game. I mean, I know that was a very context-driven decision,
right?
But it's also been shown that if you just man up and go for two every time, like, the league average is over 50%. So you go for it,
right,
and you take the good with the bad, and you're probably going to end up with more points. I want to live in a world, Katie, where we're talking about that crazy, risky, gutsy dude that punts from the 40 with 3 minutes left, because that should be the insane decision, not the guy that chooses to go for it and invest in his team. Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity as a former professional athlete to tell me to keep my stupid amateur crap out of it. But I think this is an important thing to bring up, is you got the Raiders in a situation. This might be the most important division game that they've played in years.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually means something for them. It's a division matchup against one of their biggest rivals in the division, and it actually means something important for that race, okay?
Right, because it allows them to extend that lead in the division. It's really important.
So we talk about the mentals of that. And I'm going to take you back to when I was in high school, like third week of my senior. I hate being like my amateur athletic career. But I remember like two, 3 weeks into the season, you know, they do stupid rankings for high school football teams. And I think we were ranked like second or third in the section. Mm-hmm. And really, because we'd won our first couple games, and we really had no business being there. But we go into our third game against a smaller school up in East Nicholas, and we see that number. We're like, yeah, maybe we are the second best team in the section. And, you know, predictably, we got our asses handed to us by a smaller school that was ready to play. And I, you know, still, it's obvious to me that we had that number in our heads. Now, I think at the professional level, it's a lot different. You're used to having that kind of pressure on your back, so on and so forth. But is there a little bit of something in there in a game like this that, you know, you got to be careful to not think that you're a little bit better than you are?
I think it does apply, but I think in professional sports, it applies every week because.
Well, and that's, I guess, what I'm getting to. Like, do you just get used to it? Because that pressure is on you every week, especially in the NFL. I mean, you could lose your job tomorrow.
You get used to it because of the fact that you absolutely understand that at the professional level, any team can beat you on any given night. I mean, the preparation and what goes into it, it's a little bit different, obviously, at the high school level. I think that it affects guys in a different way. But the prep involved at the professional level and all of the scouting and everything, it doesn't matter. I think that professional athletes do a pretty good job of not paying attention to a record and the record of their opponent, those types of things, because if anything, you want to not get embarrassed. It's even more embarrassing if you're a great team and you get knocked off by, say, the Chargers.
Yeah.
Like, it sticks in your craw even a little bit more.
So then if the Raiders are to lose this weekend, right, then it has absolutely nothing to do with them taking the Chargers lightly or them getting too big for their bridge. And that's like, and that's just universal fact of sports, right?
Yeah, but you also have to look at the Raiders.
No such thing as taking
an opponent
lightly. The
Raiders as a franchise have just been in the doldrums for so long. And yeah, these young guys that are on this team that are doing the work right now, they weren't on those teams. They weren't part of the crappy teams that have come through Oakland over the last several years, but they're well aware of it. So do you see where I'm getting there?
Right. But then, I mean, you can look right down the road at a team like San Diego that prior to last night, you've got this poor kid, Travis Benjamin, that comes over from Cleveland thinking that things are going to change. And then they lose in devastating fashion 4 out of their first 5 games of the season. And he's going, you know,
it's supposed
my
to be
God.
Different.
Right. Like it's supposed. And I mean, at that point,
sorry,
it's got to creep into your head, right?
I'm sorry, but he should have known better. He followed money. Am I wrong here?
Well, what are you like? He's saying that you're not supposed to?
No, I'm just saying if he went there because he thought it was going to be different, then he's the moron.
I guess, like, everything's supposed to be different from Cleveland. Like, you're basically, like, you just said
yes,
that.
Yes, it's different because they now have 2 wins. You, that's the difference.
Listen,
if he thought they were going to go out there and be a contender, then he was smoking something.
What
Test
are you talking
this guy.
About? They've got, let's see, let's think about this. They arguably have the best quarterback in that division.
Oh, that doesn't
Do they
matter.
Not?
That doesn't
you're
matter.
A,
are you telling
receiver?
Me that's the only thing that matters?
If you're a wide receiver, yeah, it's a pretty big part
yeah,
of
but,
it.
Yeah, but Nate. They're scoring. Scoring is not their problem. Offensively, they're fantastic. Their defense has been horrendous. They figure out ways to completely crap the bed when the game is on the line. They just aren't closers.
Yeah, but you expect that in Cleveland.
Ugh.
You don't like you just called a guy a moron for getting out of Cleveland.
No, he's a moron if he thought it was going to be drastically different in San Diego. That's what I'm saying.
Katie's just being mean today.
No. Calling everybody morons.
Whatever. No. Is that am I wrong, Nate?
You just
have problems because I'm not agreeing with you today.
I have.
Apparently, it's that
I
chair.
I have an issue with giving anyone a hard time for leaving Cleveland,
I'm
period.
Not giving him a hard time for leaving. God, English is not your first language this morning.
But it's
I'm not
one
giving
of 5.
Him a you know crap for leaving Cleveland. I'm giving him crap for thinking it was going to be drastically different in San Diego. He made the best decision. It doesn't mean that.
I mean, historically, it has been.
His expectations shouldn't have been so high.
I'd rather Philip Rivers throwing it to me, though.
Well, yeah. His stats are going to be nice. There
Katie,
you go.
Your face is
but
red.
What's that matters? Wins or losses?
Your face is red.
Paycheck and statistics.
It's not really. Her face isn't
it's
red.
It's not red.
You should get more upset about it.
Your ass
you get a little
is
more
red.
Fired up. It is.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
You guys going to fight again?
I would
yeah,
hope
probably.
So. Wheel of Kings is on the way. It's the final drawing. You'll get your King off the wheel.
Chance to win.
That's a fact.
Two tickets. Two pairs. It's the same thing. We're saying the same thing, just not saying it how you want me to say it.
You're right. English isn't my first language. Because when you say things like two tickets for two people, that kind of just sounds like it's two tickets for two people.
You're going to be able to win.
I'm going to have a black eye here in the next half an hour.
I'm going to San Diego. I'm taking the money. I'm out of here.
Get after it. King's Wheel is next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Yeah, hi. It me, Nate Goodyear, she Katie Christensen. We're not going to do the game show voice or whatever, but you know the Wheel of Kings.
You better, because if you don't have a chance to win these two sets of tickets.
There you go.
There, is that better?
Two
for
pairs
you?
To How's King's Row.
How's your eye feeling? I'm really sorry about that. I mean, I hate you so hard. Okay.
I'll post a picture on Instagram or something. Yeah, two pairs to King's Row tickets, King's Row seats at opening night, the Golden One Center. Anyway, that's what's going to happen. Katie's going to spin the wheel right now.
Right.
Let it rip, girl.
Okay.
Do it. I said spin it for crying out loud.
Jeez.
Would you?
I'm sorry.
Maybe.
I had to tie my shoe.
It's a little stuck. There we go. All right.
I tripped. Whatever.
That just kind of.
The final person.
It's funny that it just keeps spinning.
Yeah.
You want to know who it is?
No, I don't. I'm actually going to leave the room. I don't want to hear it.
He's the man with the plan. I don't know why I said that. Scott Pollard, everybody.
Oh,
Scott Pollard.
Scott Pollard in all his glory.
Your 15th and final. We're just going big guys. A couple days in a row, we had Brad Miller. Now we're going with
Scott
Pollard.
You're not supposed to give those out,
Nate. That sucks. Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter because that's two.
Disaster.
That's two of your 15. And if you didn't get some of the names, you got to stop on by Streets Pub and Grub on J Street tonight. 1804 J Street, to be exact, between 7:30 and 8:30. You can stop by and get the full list of this week's names, but not just this week. Here's the thing. That's the caveat we're throwing into this. It's not just this week's names. They're actually going to have all of the names.
What?
All of the names at Streets Pub and Grub tonight, including a name that wasn't mentioned on air. That's the name we were telling you about that was only at the Coors Light displays.
Right.
They're going to have that at Streets Pub and Grub tonight also between 7:30 and 8:30. Yeah, he should be.
He's going to be pissed that they're just giving that information out.
Well, I know. And then the thing you got to remember after that is that you show up at Malt and Mash on Tuesday night.
Yep.
And Dave's going to be there to pull the winner. You're going to have
final preseason game.
You're going to have all 15 names. So check that out. Visit the contest page at khtk.com. Again, your Wheel of Kings today, Scott Pollard, 15th and final effort. Hey, do we got enough time to do Nostradamus here? I think we should.
Right.
Let's go ahead and do that.
Right, who's going first?
You are.
What?
Because I'm in control.
Jeez, I hate it when you're in that chair. You're so mean. All right. My pick this week is the Panthers at the Saints. A nice NFC South contest with, I don't know, the bottom of the barrel.
You just said something that doesn't even make any sense.
I know.
A nice NFC South contest.
I know. I'm trying to make it sound good, but I'm picking two horrible teams right now because I really think that the Panthers are just going to completely just annihilate their season with the way that they started. Derek Anderson will start in place of Cam Newton. I don't think that he's going to be ready to play coming off of that concussion yet. And that'll basically seal the fate of a very struggling, horrible Carolina team who will likely be without their top target Kelvin Benjamin as well, who was limited yesterday in practice with a knee injury, which means they'll have to rely heavily on their stud tight end Greg Olsen. They're going to get two touchdowns and a field goal, I'll say. And one of those touchdowns will be from Olsen, and then I think that Cameron Artis Payne will also punch one in for a TD. Drew Brees will surpass the 5,000 career passing yards mark with the same team, like with the Saints, which
almost
I think
did that in one season. Do you mean like
no? So 50,000?
Gotcha.
Did I say 5,000?
Okay. Yes.
No, 50,000.
Cool.
He'd be only the sixth person to ever do that with an individual one single team. They'll be fresh and focused coming off their bye week, Nate, and that does not bode well for the Panthers. I don't like you. You're screwing up my Nostradamus there, Matt George. Willie Snead will come through again because I love him and his hair. With two scores, Brandon Cooks will get one as well. He'll get on that action. John Kuhn will find the end zone, I think, as well. I think I'm taking Saints 28, Panthers 17.
Bold call by Katie Lauren Christensen.
Way to use my full government name.
Taking the Aints this weekend against Carolina. Not just covering the spread, they're going to win outright. You heard that. Right now it's 8:41. Time to go solar with Sierra Pacific. Call now for $500 off at 800-551-3040. That was a nice pick of yours, Katie, but I'm telling you right now, there is no bigger lock this weekend than Seattle at home against Atlanta. This has got all the makings. Let me just play this out for you, okay? Atlanta has been doing way better than they should be because they're in the NFC South and they're a classic team of chokers. Classic letdown game for them. This has got Atlanta letdown written all over it. And then you've got a Seattle team who, in spite of being 3-1, much like every year under Pete Carroll, people talk through the first few weeks, Seattle's starting a little slow. Should we be concerned about him? Oh, there's injury problems. Russell Wilson's not okay. What about Jimmy Graham? What are they going to do? Every year, it seems like we go through this with Seattle, and then they make a huge statement, usually at home. That's what's going to happen against the Falcons. I almost called them the Hawks, the Atlanta Hawks. That's what's going to happen against the Falcons this weekend. It's a 6-point spread. It's going to be more than that. Atlanta doesn't get to 20 points. They don't. They're going to score 17 in this one. And I see Seattle. I'm actually going to take the same score as you because I don't think that Seattle's overwhelming offensively, but I see 28-17. I think you get a touchdown out of either the defense or the special teams. I'm going to straddle that fence a little bit. You're going to get a defensive or special teams touchdown out of Seattle, maybe two. Russell Wilson's going to throw for a pair, and just like that, Atlanta's an also-ran. That touchdown they score to get to 17, that's going to be in garbage time. This game's not close.
I thought
close.
The whole point of this Nostradamus thing, Nate, was to actually be very specific about who. So who are the touchdowns going to?
Russell Wilson.
He's going to score two of them?
Uh-huh.
Oh, so rushing TDs.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
Russell Wilson's going to be responsible for two touchdowns.
Well, he's the quarterback. Who is he throwing to?
Could be anybody, man.
See,
could
you
be Doug
suck.
Baldwin.
You
could be
suck.
Jimmy Graham.
Play by the rules.
Bottom line, Nate. Seahawks 28-17, and it won't even be that close. Mark it, dude. Wrap it up. It's over.
We're over.
Yeah. Well, not yet. We still got about 15
minutes
left.
No, I mean, we're over.
I don't think so. you say things like that, and you can never follow through with it. You pretend I'm not irresistible.
In your boat shoes, you're right.
Yeah, I'm right.
You are irresistible in those
prepared
boat shoes.
Prepared for a flood today on a happy Friday on KHTK. When we return, we're going to tie things off, and we'll tell you a little story. I mean, you've heard all the legendary tales of Kobe Bryant's competitiveness, but here's one you haven't heard, and it involves a guy named Luke Walton. Did I tease too much? I don't know. It's a good one, though. Stay tuned. Sports 1140 KHTK. Just a few minutes left on the drive before we turn you over to Jim Rome for a nice wet weekend, it looks like.
Nice. I like it, though. It's so nice. And I went and mowed my lawn yesterday because I'm like, it's going to be too wet on Monday to mow it, which is its normal day.
Hey, we sure need the rain, though, don't we?
Yeah,
Katie?
We do.
I tell you, the thing about weather, you have to have weather, whether or not. Whatever. I know. Seriously.
Nate, people are complaining about Matt on the text line.
I'll bet. Why do you even read that thing?
Text what?
What,
for the derp song?
I like to engage with our listeners, Nate.
There's no engagement there.
Yes, there is, because
no,
I write them back.
Only the haters.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do so.
It's not true. Only your haters.
And you shouldn't do that either.
Whatever. You have a story for us.
Oh, dude, I thought you had a story.
You have
you just
a story.
Wanted to point out that people were ripping Matt on the text line?
Oh, yeah. No, they're ripping Matt on the text line because of the music.
Well, that's
because
nonsense.
Because it's too loud and they can't hear your lovely voice. Okay, Matt.
I'm sorry, what?
All right. Stop. Stop. Nate has a very pressing story to get to.
I mean, you got to mock me like that? We got 5 minutes left in the show. We've made it all week, and you wait for Dave to be gone so you can mock me in front of God and everybody on 50,000 watts?
Well,
what kind of stunt are you trying
chair.
To pull here?
I do it to Dave when he's in that chair.
That's not how it works with this guy.
The text line wants this Chargers song. I'll give it to him.
But the text line wants a lot of things. You know, if we gave the text line everything they wanted, Well, I mean, frankly, there wouldn't be any programming on this station. Let's just start with that.
We wouldn't have a show.
Right.
Wow.
And I mean, it's not just us. That goes for, there is no larger, listen, there are plenty of good people on the text line, right? But it's a lot like customer service where, you know, 9 out of 10 people that speak up, they're not going to be the person that was pleased. There are a few larger cesspools than our text line, but not you person
Shut
that's
up.
Being nice.
You leave the text line alone.
I do, like all day.
Now, I mean,
until
now,
you
like,
read
drop
it to
it.
Me.
Nate, some people
I
like
understand
you.
Your obsession with that.
Wow.
Via
Would
silver
you
screen
get
and
to
roll.
It?
No, we still got, like, I got to kill time here.
No,
this is not a 4-minute story.
I really just want you to, like, move on from berating me for
you
engaging with our listeners.
You feeling weird?
Well,
maybe you need a little groove. Maybe
oh,
you need
God,
a little dance.
I just got hot.
Maybe you need a, yeah, you did.
You just made
Take
me
it
nervous.
Off. Unzip it. Come on, unzip it into the
Stop
microphone.
It.
Let's hear it.
Nate.
We're celebrating the Raiders being in first place.
You're going too far.
Stop it. That is nonsense. I'm not buying that from you. Supercharger. Come on. You're not. How
You're
can
very
you not,
John Travolta-ish. You could kind of do that whole genre.
I can swing. I mean, John Travolta. Yeah, I'm a swinging cat. John Travolta, you know, the dance I did with my mother for my wedding.
Was it?
We did
Grease
Twist
Lightning.
From Pulp Fiction.
Oh, did you really?
The Chuck Berry song.
Is there a video to document that?
There is somewhere.
Huh.
You're never going to see
how
it.
How have we not seen any wedding photos of you,
Nate? I'm going to call Monica.
I don't know that any of them are out yet. I think we just got the email the other day that they're finished. But they had this song during the woohoo.
Okay, you're starting to really annoy me.
Okay, not quite San Diego, but definitely. Stop it. Like, you're so.
We'll hug it out after the show.
Thank you.
Jeez.
Dateline Los Angeles via silver screen and roll. That's a Lakers blog. Ugh. Luke Walton joined Jesse Williams on his Open Run podcast yesterday. You know, we all know that Kobe is like a legendary competitor, all that type of stuff. What more could be said? But Luke Walton had kind of a funny story, Katie, as to why you don't show up to practice hungover, especially when Kobe Bryant is the boss of your team. He told Jesse Williams, quote, I probably had too much to drink the night before. So I came in, he's talking about to practice. I was a rookie. I felt good and they could smell some alcohol on me. Kobe informed the rest of the team that nobody was allowed to help me on defense and that I had to guard him the entire practice. So just imagine for a second the most hungover you've ever been, or even the least hungover you've ever been. And then, you know, you got to guard Kobe now.
Just guarding him regardless.
Right. Walton continues, says, I was laughing at first, like, oh, this is kind of funny, right? I can see that. But in Kobe's mind, in his eyes, he's like, nope, I see and smell weakness, and I'm going to destroy you today. He says he taught me a lesson. He probably scored 70-something in practice that day. I'm begging for help, but none of my teammates would help. His killer instinct and his work ethic will stick with me forever. I mean, that's kind of asking
hazing.
For it, right? Maybe you don't show up to practice hungover a little bit.
There's that as well. But I'm pretty sure that Kobe Bryant, love him or hate him, regardless, he is probably one of the fiercest competitors ever. And when you have the star of your team, the superstar of your team that works harder than anyone else and calls people out for their BS, then you're going to be successful. And that's why they were successful. But Luke Walton, to me, like... I don't know.
Okay, there's a 100% chance that every time he begged for help, that Kobe just went harder. Every single time. And how about the rest of his teammates just being like,
Nate,
I'm stepping in front of
that. Have you
ever
showed up to practice or anything maybe a little bit deep?
You mean hungover?
Yeah.
I mean, not like for anything serious. You know, like if I was playing like a school-sanctioned something or other, that, well... Yeah, I can't say that's entirely true. But no, I mean, not like that, but there are certainly some rec league basketball games where I showed up in lousy condition.
We used to have, when I played at UC Santa Barbara, we used to have practice at 9 a.m. the day following New Year's Eve, right? So New Year's Day, and our coach did that for a reason, right? And I did not drink at all in college. Like, I'm like the most bizarre, you know, like anomaly to come out of UC Santa Barbara because apparently that's all they do there and that's what it's known for. But I had teammates that would come, and not even just on New Year's Day, and you could smell it
oh, yeah.
wafting out of their pores. hours, and it was horrible. So I can only imagine, you know, Kobe Bryant getting a little sniff of that and being like, all right, I smell blood. This
I've got
is over.
My target today.
Yes.
So thanks a lot, Luke Walton.
I bet you he never showed up again hungover to
so.
Anything.
Or you can bet your ass he showered a lot, drank a lot of water. I mean, whatever. Like, it makes it harder to get started. But
that's what you're going to smell like on Monday morning,
probably,
isn't it?
The best hangover cure is exercise.
It is.
Hey, that does it for us. We made it somehow through 3 hours. Congratulations. Yeah. High five it.
There you go.
You did it. Congratulations. We're going to be back on. Oh, we didn't make it. We absolutely did not make it.
Did you get any on you?
No.
That was gross.
Ew. Thank God it's Friday.
2 hours, 57 minutes before I threw up in my mouth. I'd say that's pretty good.
You and the listeners both.
Didn't take them 3 hours, though. Jim Rome is next. Enjoy your KHTK programming day. This has been The Drive, Sports 1140
KHTK. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, who cares?